Welcome back to another episode of the MetaMakers podcast. My name is Davis.
And this is Dylan. And we're here with Alana, my sister. Would you like to introduce yourself, Alana?
Hey guys, I'm Alana. I am kin of Dylan here in Tacoma, D.C. It's a lovely rainy day.
Kin of, like, Africa first. I mean, tell people where you were born as well.
Dylan and I were both born in Nairobi, Kenya, to two anthropologist parents who lived in Kenya for 12 years, had my brother and I. My brother left when he was 6 and when I was 4, and we have some pretty vivid memories of that time.
What do you remember from Kenya, Alana?
I remember some slight traumatic events, like getting lost in a garden with some dense foliage surrounding us, and I remember being scared to ride a camel on the beach.
I think I remember that too, in Mombasa.
Yeah.
I believe is the place. Yeah. You did it.
I did do it.
You overcame.
I overcame the fear.
And currently you've got a snake around your neck.
Yes,
some,
I have a
some people
python.
Might be fearful of snakes, but people are not, you know. Tell us a little about your interest in snakes here and your not fear of them.
So... right now I have a ball python wrapped around my neck. He's about 4 years old. I believe he's a male, but we're not sure completely about that. I've had him sexed before, but it came back inconclusive, mostly due to the inbreeding that happens within the pet trade. So we were not able to probe his cloaca to the full extent and find out whether he had hemipenes, which are signifiers of a male gender or sex.
Wow, so it seems like you know a lot about animals.
Yes.
And you just graduated, correct?
Correct. I graduated from the University of North Carolina in Asheville with a degree in environmental biology and ecology. It's a great university if anyone is interested in environmental sciences. I highly recommend that school. The professors focus on field lab work. Half my classes were outside catching fish, IDing reptiles, catching birds, all sorts of things.
Nice. And you just got back from New Zealand, I hear.
Yes, I went to New Zealand and lived there for 8 months doing some research, studying at the University of Canterbury in Christchurch. And I completed a research project doing population mapping of two species of gecko in the Pacific Islands. And so this island is really interesting, actually. It's called the Kingdom of Tonga. It's the only Pacific island that hasn't been colonized, but it's been missionized. So they have quite a number of Christian communities there, such as Mormons, Catholics. And what they do is, in return for building schools and hospitals, they get to indoctrinate the people. So there are people that are very religious and conservative, but they have the highest rates of PhDs within the Pacific Islands, and especially in women. So that's quite interesting. Even though they have a fairly conservative culture, they still deeply value education, and especially that of women. So it was an interesting place to go to, because as a woman in the science realm, I had to be very respectful of their culture, and it was a great experience, but it was definitely not a vacation.
Wow. So what were you focusing on mainly when you were there? You said the gecko,
mm-hmm.
and just... Was it that specifically, or is it more
yes.
broad?
Like? Well, I did two different things there. So the first thing that I did was helping a annual research project that maps coral mortality in the Pacific Islands, which is a huge issue.
Yeah,
right
coral
now.
Reefs supply tons of oxygen.
Right.
Is that correct? I mean,
yeah, they're a carbon sink. I'm not quite sure about supplying oxygen, but they're a very good habitat for all sorts of fish. They're a main part of the food web. In addition to supplying storm barriers to islands, so if coral reefs die, then islands would become way more vulnerable to big storm surges, and that's a big threat to many Pacific islands and islands in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember hearing that oceans actually give more oxygen to the air than trees.
So I think it's a little bit confusing, but so what it is actually a carbon sink. So it's taking carbon out of the atmosphere, okay. Not necessarily adding oxygen to the atmosphere. It's a carbon sink. So it's sequestering carbon, and it is the biggest carbon sink on the planet is our oceans. Mm. Yeah.
My dad is from Tasmania in Australia. Mm. And I've actually seen some of the coral reefs, not really gotten to dive into them. I really would like to, but I know that there is a lot of coral reef dying and turning black and getting just covered in pollution from our trash, which is a big, big problem. It's kind of like deforestation, if you think
about
it.
Absolutely. And coral reefs will be one of the first things to decimate in the face of climate change, unfortunately. They're kind of like a marking species. If you see that coral reefs are dying, they're a very sensitive species, so you know that things are about to get bad. And that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing a mass bleaching events almost every year, which doesn't allow the zooxanthellae algae that's occupying the calcium carbonate structure to replenish. And that when you have multiple bleaching events back to back, that's when the trouble comes, really, because the zooxanthellae can't come back and supply nutrients to the whole organism because it's a symbiosis. I don't know. Did you know that?
I didn't know the word that you just used.
Zooxanthellae is a species of algae that creates it, secretes calcium carbonate, which creates the coral structure. And it's a photosynthetic algae, so it's dependent on sunlight to sequester food and turn that into nutrients for the whole organism.
But when the water and surface of the water is covered in pollutants, it doesn't get that sunlight?
Yes. Sediments are a huge issue to coral reefs, and pollution in general just is horrible for any creature. It's not going to be able to survive in that situation.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's really, it can be kind of sad to talk about and to think about, but we always look for solutions. And I know that one of the solutions they're doing for coral reefs is propagating them, taking small samples of coral reef and basically planting them in different places, and they're flourishing, right, under the right circumstances. But it's not over. It's not like that's not a permanent solution.
Right. And the hard thing about coral is that it takes so many hundreds of years to fully build like a huge coral reef. Some of the coral reefs now,
isn't it?
It's not millions, it's thousands.
Okay.
But under the right conditions, corals can live for hundreds of years. And the ones that we have right now are at least 400 years old. The Great Barrier Reef is very old. And so in order for these species to grow back to what they were, it's going to take hundreds of years. And with the current climate warming, it's just not a viable situation. They won't be able to survive with such high extreme weather, ocean acidification, along with pollutants. And once coral reefs die, algae takes over, and that just is a whole another thing as well.
It's kind of dark to think about that, Alana. And
this is my everyday life.
It's your everyday life. So how do you find inspiration in your work and how do you share that with others? How do you inspire others?
I think just by reading about these organisms, and that gives you such a deeper connection and satisfaction for the environment, and that is the best way to foster people that are going to go out and make change. However, I do think that too much emphasis is put on the individual for making change when it's really the corporations in charge that have decimated the planet beyond belief. And so if we can transition into a more sustainable lifestyle, eating less meat, because meat is the biggest effector of climate change in the world right now is the meat industry. So if we can push those industries, pass laws to change that, then that's the best way to do it. But too much focus is put on the individual. Like, that matters for sure, but at a certain point, it needs to be corporations as well.
Well, so when you were in New Zealand and, you know, meeting the locals there and you know, learning how bad climate change was going to affect New Zealand because it is such a vulnerable island, what was your thought on seeing all their dependence on livestock as their lifestyle? And like, how do you, I guess, you know, feel about that? Or what did you face when you were there? Like, how did you learn about it?
Right. It's hard for me to say all this because I'm not a farmer. I don't depend on farming as my main source of income. This is not what my family has grown up doing. So it's very easy for me to be like, oh, we should transition to not eating meat, you know, because I don't have, it's not a deep connection to me. I don't have a farm. However, these people who have depended on this, they should get subsidies from the government to transition into a different kind of farming, transitioning into like a vegetable-based farm rather than fully sheep farming. But once again, it is hard for me to say because I'm not, I don't own a farm. I never have, so.
Your family has, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's been in the family. So what are you excited about, you know, doing in the next coming months? Like, what, now that you've graduated school, like, what's the future looking like?
So in the next 3 days, I will be moving to St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. My main goal is to work for the Nature Conservancy, hopefully planting coral, doing some dive research for them. Additionally, I will be doing some leatherback sea turtle research, helping on the night squads, taking numbers, protecting eggs, and hopefully just making some money doing what I love, finding the reptiles there too.
Wow. So what piqued such an interest in animals and the environment in general?
Throughout my life, I've never felt a more spiritual connection than I have with nature. And I really have always loved traveling. And I thought to myself, what does this mean? Like, do I want to be in a international studies focus? But then I just realized that, no, what I like about all of these things is finding nature, is being connected to nature. So that's really what sparked my interest. And then as soon as I got to university, I was trying out a bunch of different classes and fell in love with learning more about the ecology, how things are connected in nature, our connection, human connection with nature. And then I got a snake, and that catapulted me into the herpetology realm, which is the study of reptiles. And so that's what I've been pursuing, and I hope to pursue a PhD in that eventually. But for now, I'm just learning as much as I can, reading as many scientific papers as I can on the subject. Hopefully going to save some species as well.
I believe in you.
Thank you.
So for the people listening that don't, that aren't already connected with credible sources to listen to about environmental news, where should they look? Where can we read about this stuff and inform ourselves?
So for me, it's really podcasts that I love to find my information from right now, as well as just reading books like Braiding Sweetgrass is an amazing environmental book. The Omnivore's Diet by Michael Pollan is incredible. I mostly read scientific journal articles, which don't always have open access, but there is an open access website called SciHub that has all journal articles for free. So if you're interested in those topics, that is the best source you can get it from, because those are peer-reviewed by the scientific community in empirical data. So
SciHub, SCIHUB.com.
Gov maybe or something. EDU.
Right, well,
I don't know.
We'll put the link down.
Yeah, so put the link up. It's a wonderful site, giving access to the people, because you often have to buy subscriptions in order to get journal articles, which I think is outrageous.
But I mean, those subscriptions might also be supporting journalists. You know, you never know. But
you never know. But
when people
always
charge for things, it's usually a compliment. tell us more about snakes.
So this past semester, I've been working
like
on
holding the snake. By the way, I came. I'm like, that snake has a triangular head. I thought that means poisonous, and I was
venomous,
like,
not poisonous.
Or
poison
venomous
is something you ingest, and that it works through ingestion. And venom is something through the bloodstream. So you could theoretically milk a venomous snake and drink the poison or drink the venom, and nothing would happen to you because it's not poisonous. It's venomous.
Whoa!
It's through the bloodstream.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So that's cool.
So that's one thing about snakes.
Yeah, I could tell you some more about snakes. So snakes only have one functioning lung. In order to have the body shape that they do, they can only have one lung, because two lungs would take up too much space. Snakes also, if you can see here on my snake, sorry for the listeners who can't see, there's a little slit in the bottom of its face, and that is where the skin parts in order for it to consume its meals. And they also, so they don't... they don't really see very well, but they have little pits, especially this python here has little pits surrounding its mouth area that are heat sensory pits. So they only see in heat, really. That's how they're seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like thermal vision. And this tongue, right?
Yeah, and the tongue is how they taste.
Taste.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And smell.
Can they hear things?
They hear through vibrations.
Whoa.
Because all things are vibrations.
I mean, yeah, if you look at the skin and you look at cymatics, which is the study of visualizing vibrations, you'll notice that it actually has a cymatic pattern on its scales that come from vibration. And for those of people that are listening to have no idea what I'm talking about, if you're drinking something like a glass of water, look down in the cup and tap the edge of the cup and you'll see the rings. That is cymatics. And it happens all around us every time, like every minute, every second of our lives.
Influences nature especially.
Yeah, so what I was doing this past semester was working with a species of boa in the Pacific Islands in the genus Candoia. It's very endemic, meaning it only occurs in these few archipelagos in the Pacific Islands. And I got an opportunity to work with the Reynolds Lab at University of North Carolina, the evolutionary biology lab. And I got to write code for them and took museum records with a bunch of point locality data of where these boas were occurring on these islands, and basically construct out of Photoshop and coding maps huge visual distribution maps of where this species of snake occurs in the Pacific Islands. And this is really important because no one has ever compiled all of this data showing where these species occur on which islands, and so this can inform our conservation efforts in the future. If we know where these species occur, we know which habitats we need to protect. And a lot of these islands have way bigger things to focus on, such as where they're going to put their trash or how they're going to get fresh water, how they're going to deal with rising sea levels. They're not worried about their snake species necessarily, but I am. So that's really cool that I get to provide some really comprehensive, innovative maps of these species and where they occur. Look for that publication in July, coming out on a few biology open access journals. Be really cool.
Nice.
Have snakes ever been like service snakes, like to help people with maybe emotional trauma, or you know, have you ever seen any research about that? Like maybe that could help the greater community, is getting a snake to help you through certain things. Have you ever seen something like that?
I have not seen that, but thinking about it, it definitely could be a form of therapy. I know all animals, I mean, having an animal connection is definitely special, and snakes are calm, and it can probably help you face some of your evolutionary fears. Humans evolutionarily have grown to be fearful of snakes, which is, you know, I mean, it makes sense. Some of them are venomous. We want to be careful. But overcoming some of those fears and learning about snakes can be very beneficial to the human psyche, I think. I mean, any sort of overcoming of fears is beneficial.
Absolutely. Well, Alana, where can people connect with you to learn more about snakes and follow your journeys and yeah, overall, maybe start a conversation?
You can follow me on Instagram. My handle is slicklizard. Or search me on LinkedIn. Look for my publications.
Yeah, we'll drop some links for you. I just had a quick question, though. It's like they say the earth is self-balancing, and to have light, there must be darkness and the balance of good and evil and stuff like that. In terms of like organizations that are doing restorative work, what are some of those communities or organizations or companies even that you've encountered that are doing like environmental preservation or sustainable justice and stuff like that? I mean, there's got to be a lot. It's like every time I get on Instagram, it's showing me more of what I like when I'm, you know, because of the algorithms. And then lately it's been showing me sustainable pages and like Save the Earth. Like there's tons of these pages popping up, right? Because the balance is all the darkness and all the bad stuff, right? Quote unquote bad stuff is happening. And then there's the balance is happening as well. So what are some of those organizations that you've connected with so far that people might be able to connect with and find some hope for environmental preservation and also restoration?
Yes, some of my favorite people leading this escapade into environmentalism is Paul Nitschen. He is a photographer for Nat Geo. He's incredible. You can follow his journey on Instagram. And his company is Sea Legacy, and they do a lot with the Nordic areas and whales and just general marine time conservation. Additionally, I have a really good friend, Nola Owner, who works for a company called Best Bees. Their headquarters are in Boston, Massachusetts, and they provide a service if you wanted a beehive in your backyard or at your company. They come and install that for you and do weekly checks on your bees to make sure everything's going well. And they also supply you with the honey that comes from your hive. It's super sustainable, incredible place. I got a tour of there the other day, and they're building all of their bee boxes by hand. They grow their queen bees, and are super well informed about the whole ecology of bees, because bees are incredibly complicated creatures, and taking care of them can be quite complicated. So they're a really great organization. They actually put bees on the top of Union Station in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
So there are bees up there, and they have hives up there. They're a great organization. Best Bees is their name. And they have locations throughout the United States. So if you're interested, definitely look them up. They can do it pretty much in any big city, I think.
That's awesome. And I know there's so many unused rooftops. We can put bees, we can put gardens, collect water and solar panels. There's solar tiles now. They're making shingles out of solar, like mini solar panels. So, yeah, I mean, they're, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of bad stuff going on. There's a lot of good stuff going on. And unfortunately, in our politics and, you know, historically, fear has been one of the most powerful driving forces in politics. So a lot of time, all we hear about is the bad stuff, right? Mm-hmm. The scary stuff. And it's like, we don't even want to listen to the TV or the radio anymore. But there is a lot of good stuff going on. We just don't always hear about it.
Yeah, I think knowing where you're getting your media content from is very important. For me, it's mostly podcasts and things that resources that I've looked into, that I've checked, have credible sources. And it's very easy to get overwhelmed with our current situation within the climate. But I think ultimately for me, I've decided I'm going to do the best I can as an individual. But at the end of the day, I'm going to enjoy my life and live out on this beautiful earth and appreciate it as much as I can. But it is not in solely my hands to save the earth. But I will do everything I can.
Yeah. So what are some tangible solutions for everyone listening? Some things we can start doing today, you know, as individuals?
Vote. Get registered to vote is one of the best things. Get informed about who you're voting for as well. Reading, just being educated on the topics. And then by far, one of the biggest impacts you can make as an individual consumer is the transition towards a vegetarian or vegan diet.
The lifestyle.
Lifestyle, really. Yeah, so the meat industry is a whole ball game.
It's the whole animal agriculture
industry. Right, the whole animal agriculture industry is incredibly horrible to the environment. It is the biggest use of land, fresh water. It is the biggest polluter. And it's, if you, just one hamburger is equivalent to 660 gallons of water, which is equivalent to a 10-minute shower every day for 2 months.
Let's break that down real quick, because I've heard that statistic before, and at first it just didn't make sense to me. But then I realized that the cow is getting fed grain,
right?
And that grain takes water to grow.
Yes.
Okay, and then also drinks water. By the way, cows drink water, okay? Cows
don't drink milk. Tons of water.
Baby cows, calves drink milk. When they grow up, they lose the enzyme, just like every other animal on the planet, and start drinking water.
People gotta drink water. Yeah, so anyways, that's why it adds up to 600 gallons of water. 10-minute shower every day for 2 months. You can save just by not eating one hamburger. Additionally, I mean, there are so many negative health benefits to eating our modern day animal agriculture. I'm not talking about like wild game or anything like that. I'm talking about the large scale American meat industry in specific. They are actively decimating rainforest in the South American rainforest, in Borneo, all places that have incredibly high biodiversity. They're cutting down rainforest and putting livestock on them.
So that we can eat them.
Yeah, so that we can eat them. additionally, I was just reading some papers about how the slaughterhouse industry is primarily employees of the slaughterhouse industry are mostly the slaughterhouse industry is primarily occupied by immigrant workers, and so they are not incentivized to report violations, sanitary violations or health code violations within the meat industry. So they're in a position where they can't really report those violations that are coming up within the American meat industry. And so then it falls on to the government to make sure that our meat is clean and safe. However, the FDA and the USDA, the two oversights of violations in the American meat industry, are heavily understaffed. So a report just came out that they haven't been doing health checks on over 300 farms for 30 years. They have not been checking these large corporations.
And that's because, you know, the immigrants have felt unsafe to say things, right?
Right, yeah.
They think they're going to, you know, be deported, right?
They think they're going to be deported, so they're relying on the government to report those violations. But the government is heavily understaffed in this area. And when they do report these violations, the big corporation leaders often don't want them to even speak about it. They're harassed. There's many accounts of them saying that they were harassed as they were doing the checks of these industries. And I don't know if everyone knew, but the largest amount of foodborne illness comes from the meat industry, and foodborne illness affects about 1 million people in the U.S. every year, and that is primarily coming from the meat industry.
So we vote with our dollars, right?
Yes.
And that is also contagious. It's energy. And so when people see us eating delicious veggie burgers with black bean or a beet burger or the Impossible Burger, shout out to Impossible Burger because they figured out a way to make plants taste like meat. And it's called Impossible because it literally is impossible. But they make heme from plants. Heme is in the hemoglobin of blood, which when it sizzles, that's what makes meat smell like meat and actually taste like meat. So they synthesize the heme from plants protein and made this burger that looks like meat, and it sizzles like meat, and it even bleeds like meat, but it's all plants.
Wild.
And so, exactly. So there's a lot of options. There's more options now than there ever have been. You go to Aldi, I saw like 20 different types of veggie burgers. That's the most I've ever seen in my entire life. It's a lot.
Yeah, there's a huge misconception that eating vegetarian or vegan is outrageously expensive, but that's totally false. It's absolutely
long-term
cheaper.
Long-term, too. Go to the hospital less.
Yeah, you'll be way healthier in the long term. You'll have a way less environmental impact. It's just, it's going to need to be a mass shift to eating vegetarian or vegan.
Yeah, and that's why we like to always provide delicious, delicious plant-based food at our events. It's like we're leading by example. We're not telling people what to eat. We just give them options and they choose. Mm. A lot of time it's just a choice between plant-based options. But anyways,
at least it's a choice.
Yeah, Alana, thank you so much for sharing this conversation
you.
With us. I mean, I could talk about the environment all day, and I think we might later after this podcast. But we're going to drop the links for you, for people to connect with you, and then maybe we'll update the links when your report comes. Or what's it called?
It's a journal article.
What's it going to be titled again?
It's Comprehensive Boa Mapping for the Pacific Islands in the genus Candoya.
Nice. And stay safe in St. Croix. Learn a lot. We're going to miss you for sure, but you know, excited for you to come back and share all the knowledge you're going to gain if you come back.
Yeah, if I come back.
But yeah, for sure. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
And as always, this has been an episode of the MetaMakers podcast, Collaborative Arts,
Inspiring Sustainability.
Thanks for listening.